Hi, I'm George Duval. I'm a full-time engineer and a part-time professor. And it's hard for me to dress snappy sometimes, but this is one rare occasion, but I still can't get my name tag straight. But that's because I'm an engineer. I want to talk about how I feel the past, present, and future are all interconnected at this very moment, and this moment. And how we all have our own timelines and how we're all actually interconnected through these timelines. And I want to give an example of how I feel the past, present, and future are connected through my own timeline and this one part-time path I have as a professor. Now, what do I mean by timeline? You know, I imagine all of us having our own timelines, and this is kind of where I borrow from string theory my concept of what a timeline is. And in string theory, because I really don't have much time to talk about that, it's a multidimensional model. And what we experience is in the lower four dimensions, the first three dimensions, and the fourth is what is this very moment right now. Now, we can only see what is happening in front of us, but now imagine just pushing beyond that, because this takes a little bit of imagination, and viewing the past, present, and future all on one line. This is where the fifth dimension is. And if in the fifth dimension, if we can see all our past, present, and future, this is one particular thread that we can make. And I see this as kind of a parabolic arc that we all have. Now, whether this is an arc of life energy or your path or whatever you want to call it, I see all of us having our own arcs, and they're all interconnected. Now, if you take a look at your own arc from start to finish, you may see some imperfections where, you know, there was dips in the way and there were peaks and things like that, and you might, in hindsight's always saying, well, if I could go back and change this part, maybe my trajectory would have been better, you know, had I only done this, hindsight being 20/20. Those what-if scenarios, I'm going to stretch your imaginations again, those go out into the sixth dimension. Now, these are multi-paths that we can take, that we could have taken, but different realities. And they all collapse to where we are right now in this reality, in the fourth dimension that we can only observe. These multi-paths in the sixth dimension actually show strong trend lines that we do see, you know, we could most likely take these paths, but once we collapse them all to this reality, this is where we are right now, this very moment. My own arc, I can take a look at where I've been and what got me here today, and I take a look at my own misspent youth and wrong priorities and a little bit of misguidance and a strong aversion to authority. But somewhere around in my late 20s and early 30s, I finally was receptive to listening to advice. Or back then, I thought everybody finally smartened up. I went back to school. And I was a non-traditional student. I was a single father with four kids, trying to make ends meet, trying to raise a family, but also trying to improve myself because I knew I had it in me that I could propel myself further. And at one point, I realized that my skills were really rusty. And I saw my arc going like this. But it took the arc of another, in the form of a professor, who actually saw something in me. Maybe it was echoes of my trends in the sixth dimension, that he reached out and he related to me and said, you know, I've been where you've been. This is the stuff that you need to do if you really want to get ahead in this. And that resonance was so strong, and we connected so well, that it really did propel me to where I am today. And where am I today? Well, guess what? I'm a part-time teacher. And now I'm teaching non-traditional students at a community college, which is mainly people who have full-time jobs and are trying to better themselves. Like my predecessors, my experience has helped me tune in more to those struggling students. And for me, I see an importance of making that connection. If I see their trajectory starting to lose ground, and especially if I can see something in them that could lead to a better future for them, I really can make an empathetic connection with them with compassion. I've got many examples I'd love to share at coffee hour if you want. You know, for instance, like how I turned somebody's wisecrack to spark an entrepreneurial spirit in the student, and now he's off making a product. Or how I helped another student find a path out of addiction. It's tuning into these things and giving back and receiving more. But at one point, I saw it. The past interacting with the present, reaching into the future. If it weren't for the echoes of my past professor reaching out and helping me, I wouldn't be able to help this current student or these current batches of students that I work with at this very moment who have yet to achieve their full potential. And to me, in recognizing these timeless interconnections across past, present, and future, this is where I find fulfillment in my part-time job.
I'm Ginny Steele. And I'll start back a while. Our daughter, Jennifer, had turned into a vegetarian when she was in college, which required some adjustments to our family menus when she came home for visits. The longer this went on, the more I found myself admiring her position, which was firmly based on ecological values. During those years, we both read the book Diet for a Small Planet by Frances Moore LaPaye, who happens to be a Unitarian Universalist. And we were convinced by its main point, the wastefulness of using grains to grow meat and the vastly greater numbers of people that could be fed on plant-based diets. I even included these concepts in a special project about food that we created in the religious education program in the Wayland UU Church, where I was the DRE. Still, it wasn't until I was attending our UU General Assembly in Charlotte, North Carolina, in 1993, that I had my conversion experience. Yes, that's the right word for it. One of the speakers said something about looking at our food choices from the point of view of a chicken. It wasn't that statement that swayed me, but I was swayed. I left the auditorium with a new sense of commitment and walked across the campus to the next event on my agenda. This walk took me right past a huge array of grills where hot dogs and hamburgers were being prepared to feed a crowd. It smelled wonderful. But it took me only a moment to decide that I could enjoy the aroma without compromising my newfound commitment. When I went home, I went back to cooking Colin's usual meat-based meals and started cooking vegetarian dishes for myself. I had always been fond of Indian food, and I found lots of good recipes to use. In my visits to India, I enjoyed the variety of veg dishes that were served in the home cooking I sampled all over the country. And all I had to do when we ate out was not choose the non-veg. It has not been hard to stick to my principles when I consider what goes into the production of meat in this country. Animal waste from feedlots and hog facilities polluting water supplies, grain that could have fed 10 to 25 times as many people if it were not turned into meat, the sheer quantity of water needed to support the animals, and the inhumane conditions in which the majority of our meat-producing animals are kept. It has not been simple either. I would eat venison, especially if the deer had eaten my ewes or my tulips, or if it would mean fewer ticks. I think that some of our superfluous Canada geese, protected because they used to be migratory, which many of them are not anymore, should be harvested to provide Thanksgiving dinner for the needy. It's not simple when I'm a guest. Some of our friends like to try out vegetarian dishes when I come. Some know that I'm happy to just not eat meat that they're serving. There are even situations where I will eat some meat if it would be too rude to refuse it. Some principles outweigh others, sometimes. It's not simple when it comes to seafood. It's all about sustainable harvesting. I think clams are okay. Some kinds of tuna are certainly being overfished. Others may be all right. I like to refer to one of those little cards you can get that tell which species are in trouble and which are not. And it's not even simple to talk about it, as I am well aware that mass conversions are highly unlikely, even as I do keep hoping that everyone will see the light and decide to move toward a diet that is more healthful for us personally and for our planet.